the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, best our Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardinalsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site. And with me for our regular Tuesday night show, we're now on our regular schedule where we react a couple of days after the Cardinals have played. I've got Seth Cox, my co-host from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and we're on episode 587. We proved to be pretty dang smart about how things would go down in this game. And the Cardinals, they go into Buffalo. They're competitive and they look great, and then they look bad, and then they lose a close game 34-28 after they had a 17-3 first half lead. And in this game, we're going to talk about the good, we're going to talk about the bad, we're going to talk about what needs to change. But I will say this, that sometimes it pains us to be right in terms of what the Cardinals do, because we both nailed all the betting things. So we, you know, hit the over. Bills are going to win, but the Cardinals are going to cover, and they cover the 6.5, losing by 6. And if you guys heard my preview show with Nick Wotan last week, I totally predicted how the game would go. I thought they would come out and punch him in the mouth and then fade late, because the Bills would get their act together and ultimately come away with a win. And that proved to be just that, right, Seth? And we hit on a few other bets, the Matt Prater prop on the kicking prop, Greg Dortch's, although the Greg Dortch bet ended up, by the end of the week, they ratcheted it down to 2.5 and made it negative odds. So instead of getting, going with over 3.5 or like plus 130, it ended up being over 2.5 or minus 130, but he still quite surpassed that. And the only thing we both of us kind of took a bath on were the running backs, because neither James Cook nor James Conner hit 75 yards.
Yeah, and it was interesting that they struggled to run the ball, but at the same time we saw, like you said, Matt Prater, Greg Dortch, you know, Prater.
Oh, your anytime touchdown for Josh Allen cashed in for sure.
Yeah. I mean, that wasn't even worth it. I mean, I think it was like plus 125. So, you know, it's one of those situations where you watch this game and you saw the script unfolding right as the half was coming, because it was, you know, everybody's like, I can't believe they blew a 17-3 lead. And it's like, really? You can't believe that a defense that couldn't get a stop got lucky on a turnover, on a fumble, that they couldn't stop somebody right before the half and then right after the half. Like, I get it was 17-3, but you have to understand the Cardinals didn't have a possession after it turned 17-3. So 17-3, the Bills got the next two possessions and it was tied. So it was basically the Cardinals had to, you know, beat the Bills twice. They beat them in the first half, then they had to beat them in the second half, because it came out right after the second half started at 0-0, right? And that was the unfortunate part, is that it just, the script was written perfectly that they got the ball with too much time left in the first half. And let's be honest, you can't run the clock down at that juncture of the game. Like, there's no 4-minute offense, so they don't get the ball going into, you know, before halftime. You have to at some point have a defense that stands up and says, nope, not happening. And we knew that was unlikely for this group. And that's how it played out. And
yeah,
and it's one of those situations where, you know, 17-3 seems like a really fun narrative. And it was the score. I mean, it was absolutely the score. But again, it was 17-3. And then the Cardinals offense never saw the ball again until it was 17-17. Well, I guess technically they got the ball and
they had a kneel down.
but like, they never got the ball again. And I just don't think people realize, like, that's not a sustainable way to do things, right? Like that was
right.
That was just the unfortunate reality of it. And you know, to have an offense that scores touchdowns on every play, it makes it really, really difficult to have success, because it just is one of those situations where if that happens, it's really hard to be a good team, right?
Yes. Yeah. But let's focus on the good. So let's start with the good. And you have to like it. And didn't it feel like at the beginning of this felt like the Tennessee game, right, at the beginning, just without the five sacks by Chandler Jones. But we're not focusing on the negative. We're going to focus on the positive. What did we see in the first half offensively? We saw an offense that was multiple, that was, you know, dangerous, that you could get production from lots of players. Kyler made plays. But it was, yeah, it felt... Now, I will say this, they did benefit. They did benefit from a personal foul that shouldn't have been called when Kyler went down and the Buffalo Bills player basically dove over him but still got flagged. There were flags. There were penalties that changed. Basically, I think I counted there were four officiating decisions that kind of changed how the game went. One that was in favor of the... Well, three that were actually in favor of the Bills. Actually, all four of them. No. One favored the Cardinals, and there was that one, and the other three were favored the Bills, and that was the Zaven Collins roughing the passer, like, what in the world? And then the two non-calls at the very end of the game against Greg Dortch. Not that Greg Dortch was ever going to draw pass interference penalties like that. But I mean, the offense was like what we saw at the end of last year, because they completely controlled the clock. They completely controlled it. You look at their time of possession and what they did really well last year when the offense once was humming, even when they had some success with Josh Dobbs, is that they had long sustained drives that ended with points and lasted a long time. So their first three possessions, it went touchdown, field goal, touchdown. They went 13 plays, 10 plays, 13 plays, 7:13 time of possession, 5:27, 7:07 time of possession. That is, I mean, you can't ask for much more than that offensively, can you? And, you know, Kyler Murray was efficient. The run game was there, even though James Conner was contained. But you really kind of had production from all over, right?
Yeah, and you had a lot of opportunities at more production, and there was, you know, there were some issues late in the game that we saw, but you know, you had to be excited for how things started. I think the reality became that this team has, you know, the weapons and the ability to, like you said, be multiple and do things in different ways. The problem started to creep in late, and that's okay, right? But for the most part, I mean, I think you saw you had James Conner with 83 total yards from scrimmage, right? Not ideal that it only 50 were rushing, but 83 total yards from scrimmage. You know, you had Greg Dortch with 6 receptions. You had Trey McBride with 5 receptions. So you had guys that were in positions to make plays. And Kyler Murray was very efficient with the ball, and that was good. It's just, you know, at the end of the day, the reality is that the best player on the field made plays that the Cardinals couldn't stop, right?
Yeah.
And that's where it really comes down to with all of that, is that when the best player on the field is on the other team and they have the ball in their hands, it typically turns out to be bad, and that's kind of what happened. But you have to look at, like you said, the net positives. I mean, they had opportunities. They were better against penalties. They were 7 of 13 on third down conversions. The hard
they
part
had zero offensive penalties, which is impressive.
The hard part was, I could be completely misremembering this, but I think they had like an 18-12, right around there, time of possession lead.
In the first half, it was more than 2-1. It was 20 minutes and 6 seconds to like 9 minutes and 54 seconds in the first half.
Yeah, so they had that's right. So it was huge. They lost the time of possession.
They did. That is one thing. It was definitely a tale of two halves. Other positives, obviously, the fact that they battled back. That kickoff return by DJ Dallas. You're like, all right, here in this, like, literally, you could say that with one play in the second half, DJ Dallas basically earned his contract, wouldn't you say, with that 96-yard touchdown return for that kickoff return for a touchdown, because that was something else. And Jeff Rogers talked about it. Their special team coach and assistant head coach talked about it on Tuesday. And the reason why they went out and got him is because they saw, and it was facing Seattle twice a year for the 4 years that he played for Seattle, because he is a big runner. He runs to contact and he's fast. He's very hard to get down, you know? And it became we got to see history, because with the new kickoff rule, Dallas became the first touchdown return. And they were in a place, and another positive, like, despite the bad that happened in the second half, they found themselves in a position to go down and be able to win the ball game, which we've seen Cardinals teams fold. And we saw a team that was in control that, you know, lost control, but then still put themselves in a position to win the game. Defensively, there wasn't a lot of positives, but you had to like the some individual play. Zaven Collins looked fantastic with stolen a sack, and Mack Wilson looked fantastic. If you had to look at like individuals that played well, both of them defensively looked great. Zaven playing from that, he had 9 tackles, should have had a sack and 10 tackles. Mack Wilson was all over the place, knocked the ball down, had a quarterback hit, but at least if you're looking from a production standpoint on defense, there wasn't a lot to get excited about except for those two players. They were both really good.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned DJ Dallas. I don't want to take anything away. Man, he looks slow on that back half of that run, right? Like, you're like, is he going to get there? Is he going to get there?
He's a big dude.
He is, and that's kind of what I was expecting more, is like kind of a thudder, but great play. He made it work out really well, so that was fun to see. I was a little surprised about the lack of snaps for Trey Benson. I know Amari DiMercato is really kind of the pseudo third down back when they actually take James off the field, right?
Yeah, it is like if you look at a traditional, if you've watched the NFL for a long time in that West Coast scheme, and if you go back to early 2000s, the 90s, every team had a passing down back. Like if it's clear pass, he's your guy. That's Amari DiMercato, because not only can he catch passes, but it's mostly because of pass protection. And he got production, but like, and we saw that last year, and going into this year in the offseason, it became very clear that is DiMercato's role. And Benson is the spell guy. And you might see a little more like, but you always see NFL games go like when you have a workhorse runner like a James Conner or a lead back, you will come in, you know, in the second quarter, and then you will suddenly have just a drive for the other back. So that way the starter gets an entire series off. And then after that, it's kind of spelling throughout the game, but it's always goes workhorse, workhorse, workhorse. And then randomly one drive somewhere in the first half is the other guy. By the way, if you ever sim Madden games, that is exactly how Madden games do it as well. There'll be just a random drive where the starting running back isn't in the game.
Right. And that's, you know, that's how it goes. So it was interesting to see that. But I think we have to mention Paris too, right?
Oh, my gosh. He was so good. Like, he looks great on the left side.
He played extremely well against a good Bills pass rush. We won't mention the other side. We'll just.
Because we're talking about the good. We are talking about the good. And honestly, the offensive line.
Yeah, outside of one position was really
pretty good.
Yeah, it was not bad. But the one was so glaringly bad that it became an issue. I thought overall there were some real positive things to come out of this game. And I thought we saw that this team has some things, especially on the offensive side of the ball, that will, you know, eventually help them get to where they want to be. But I want to mention one more thing positive before we go to the bad. I thought Zaven Collins played really well. He got screwed on a you know, phantom call, but I thought he's probably their best run defender on that front. I thought he was excellent in coverage, and I thought he showed a little more as a pass rusher, and that, you know, all of that is kind of what we wanted to see, right? Like, just a little bit more of everything, and we saw it, and that was good, because, you know, from there it didn't go so well.
That's what I say. Zaven and Mac had good games on defense, and then Kaiser White is solid, but yeah, that's unfortunately, now we move to the bad. But ultimately, like, this was a team that we thought could go in and compete, and they did. They punched Buffalo in the mouth. Offensively, they proved they have something, and even with concerns we're going to talk about in the next segment. But defensively, they just didn't have an answer and ultimately faltered. But that said, to do that on the road against that team gives you some optimism for the next few games. And with that, coming up next on the Rise of Sierra podcast, especially our Cardinals talk on the web, let's move on and talk about the not so good. So we're going to focus on the bad in this segment. That's coming to next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, especially our Cardinals talk on the web. Now talking about the Cardinals Bills, the bad. And I mean, really doesn't, it just comes down to this. The Cardinals had no answer for Josh Allen. They did okay with James Cook in terms of the running game, although he did end up having over 100 yards of total offense between his three catches for 32 yards and his 71 rushing yards. But in terms of the run game, James Cook was contained 3.7 yards per carry. Basically, this was the Josh Allen show. The guys made plays, but this was really kind of like Josh Allen being Josh Allen when, you know, they took away Stephon Diggs and Gabe Davis is gone, and it became, all right, this is the Josh Allen show. And my goodness, the Cardinals honestly had no answer for him.
Yeah. And we were worried about that, kind of assumed that's how the thing would go. And you look at it and there was a lot of issues. And I think a lot of those issues came up in key clutch situations. You know, third and 11, and you get the first drive of the third quarter, you get a third and 11, you're feeling positive about that, and they complete a 25-yard pass to James Cook. You know, that's, again, not ideal. Then you get them in third and 10, and they complete a touchdown pass. All right. Well, you get them off the field. You have, obviously, the fumble from Kyler. It's like, all right, defense, you need to come out and make a play. And it was like,
They couldn't ever. Well, then that's like in the first half, they built that lead, but they didn't build that lead because they were good defensively. That was the one thing that always felt, you're like, oh my gosh, the offense is going to have to keep going. And at least they were playing with the lead, because on the first drive, You know, they benefit for turnover. That's, and that was a play. That was good. The defense made a play, but they gave up a big return, and then they gave up a play. And then on the very next drive, they just, like, Buffalo just moved at will down the field. And the only reason they didn't score a touchdown was because
Osiris Torrance
decided to hold on to Dante and grab his. That's the only reason. Otherwise, Josh Allen would have had three rushing touchdowns in the game, and it would have been a different story. But so the Cardinals literally up until they got that stop at the end of the game to give them a chance to win on that final drive. Honestly, the defense had no answer for Josh Allen. I think it comes down to what was the major concern we had, the pass rush, and the PFF came out and their tackles were a perfect 31 for 31 on pass blocking in terms of wins.
Well,
they allowed
except for the one that wasn't.
But so but you take away the penalty, but like they were 100% aside from the Zaven Collins play, which was deemed a penalty. There was no one on the edge that beat a tackle one-on-one.
Well, so Jess, let's go through this real quick. Okay. I mean, and it's quick. We don't even have to. First drive, they never had a third down. Okay. They fumbled on first and 10, but they never had a third down. Second drive, they had a third and 4 that they scored a touchdown on. Like you said, got negated on the penalty. Third and 19, they held. Okay. Not terrible, but obviously not ideal. The next drive, they got a 3rd and 6, give up a 19-yard pass play. That was the only third down on that drive. The next drive, coming out of the half, they get a 3rd and 11 that we talked about earlier, give up a 25-yard pass play, and then get a 3rd and 10, give up a touchdown. They get off the field on a 3rd and 7 on a really, really bad Josh Allen miss that we don't need to talk about, right? Because he had a great game. But, I mean, Marquez Valdes-Scantling was wide open. wide open. They get a 3rd and 2, can't get a stop. They get a 3rd and 14. They give up 12 yards, which what does what? Allows them to go for it on 4th down. You know, and so that was kind of, and then they finally got a stop on 3rd and 6 in the, you know, late in the 4th quarter that allowed them a chance to kind of get back in the game. But like when you're talking about a couple of situations in there, one that, you know, they only forced 9 third downs all game. 9.
Yeah, and like you look at their percentage, it's good, but it's not good. So 3 of 9, solid. But you also, like, if you want to get a kind of a truer look at it, is that they were 3 of 9 on third down, but the Bills were 2 for 2. So it really is 5 out of 11, which is far less impressive as a defense. Because you have to win on first and second down too, because otherwise, when you have a Josh Allen, you get to 4th and 1, 4th and 2. Guess what you're just going to do? They're just going to have the ball in his hands and they're going to get the first down. 6 red zone trips, 6 of them. That's not good. You can't let the team get in the red zone 6 times.
No, and that's what the issue becomes, right? This is just a defense that, it can be bend but don't break, but it can't be bend and break. Like you gotta have something.
You have to make plays somewhere. And I mean, the conversation is like Buddha didn't look good.
No, Buddha missed a couple. Yeah, Buddha missed some tackles, which is, you know, unfortunate. He missed 3 tackles, in fact, and they were big tackles, right? Like it wasn't like they were
not to say that tackling Josh Allen in the open field is an easy thing to do because it is not.
That's the only one I'm not super upset about. It's the other two where you're like, you're flying to the ball and you just don't wrap up. I mean, that's like basic, you know, fundamental football stuff.
Very, very not Buddha as well.
We kind of hinted at it, and we do have to at least, you know, acknowledge it. But I mean, whew, Kelvin, I mean, it was not a pretty day at the office for Kelvin Beecham, right? Like, he only played, he didn't play the whole game, because obviously Jonah Williams is the starter.
Williams got hurt on the last play of the first quarter. So
right. So he played 39 snaps and he gave up 3 sacks. That's not ideal. Not Greg Rousseau just kind of became Chandler Jones, kind of like you mentioned, right? Like,
yes,
3 sacks in the first game. It's not ideal. Von Miller was keeping him in hell, and Von Miller is older at this juncture of his career.
Jeez, that play when Kyler tripped for the Von Miller sack, that Von Miller just completely put him on skates. He put Beecham on skates on that one.
And so it's just one of those situations where you look at it and, you know, I think that changed the game plan more than we realize. They realized that they couldn't run deep pass sets because Beach couldn't hold up.
Well, and I'll be honest, my guess, because the report came out earlier this evening that Williams is going to miss time, which means Beach is going to be in the lineup. Beecham getting more reps in practice as the starter will help him. I think he's probably, would you agree? He's kind of the different, he's a different guy than... He's different than a bullpen guy or like a backup quarterback, where your backup quarterback can get you through the game. Beecham can do it, but he's probably a stronger player who you have in the lineup, right? In my opinion, because you can give him all the reps that he needs during the week to prepare for that particular game plan. And rather than coming in cold, having had a few set reps to prepare for that game speed. Against guys like Greg Rousseau, who the Bills hope break out this year. And, well, in 3 sacks in week 1, that is a good start to a breakout year.
Yeah, and that's, you know, what needs to happen is, like you said, he needs a week because he's going to be the guy for, it sounds like, at least the next couple games. And they have, I mean, we know they've got a killer schedule coming up, so they've got to come out and just be ready for this, because it's just going to get, you know, more and more difficult. I mean, the Rams coming up this week, which we'll, you know, discuss on Thursday, but then the Lions after that. And so they don't really get a reprieve until they get Washington in week 4. So it's just, I mean, it's one of those situations where they have to find a way to make it work, because you can't have an offense that's predicated on short, quick passing games get behind, because then it's easier to just keep everything in front, give up those yards and make tackles. And that was the thing that was missing from this game. Really, Kyler Murray was the only guy making plays in the open field. Like,
yes,
nobody else was turning their catches into big plays. Nobody else was turning their runs into big plays. There was a lot of grinding it out. Obviously James Conner had that singular 20-yard run, which was, you know, a really nice run, don't get me wrong, but he averaged 2 yards a carry other than that.
Yep. Well, and those were 2 burst plays in a row, because Kyler went for 29 and then Connor went for 20, and that was basically the drive.
Right. And so you need more from your playmakers. I mean, you need more from Greg Dortch. We touched on it, 6 catches, but 47 yards along of 14. Trey McBride, 5 for 30 along of 8. That's just not going to cut it. And you can say, well, they're just not getting the ball in the spots, but as a lot of those throws were similar to last year, where they're making plays and then getting upfield, and they struggled to do that this week.
And I will say Buffalo played really well defensively.
Yeah,
they played really well defensively, but it felt like everyone loves Drew Petsing. But here's the thing I'm noticing so far. Okay, maybe a concern. He doesn't scheme well for receivers.
He really doesn't. And it's one of those situations that you look at it and it's like, is it the scheme, or is it that he's just not putting that there's just not the cohesion that there needs to be yet.
Maybe, but like last year that worked out well because they weren't getting anything from the receiver position anyway. And Hollywood was hurt much of the year.
Well, and there were two big, big drops. And I mean, even Trey McBride's drop on that screenplay. I mean, those were, I know that's a screen, but there was nobody around him if he catches the ball. And it wasn't like it was a hard, like it was just a mental lapse. The throw to Michael Wilson was probably Kyler Murray's best throw of the day.
That was beautiful. Oh, I will say this, the throw to Dortch down at the end of the game was also a beautiful throw. That throw could you have imagined if Dortch had hauled that in, just the heart attack for all the Bills fans.
Right.
If he completes that catch down there and they go in to win that game, that throw, but yeah, the officiating was questionable in that game for a few plays. But yeah, something I have to note that this is shout out to Diego, and he was so pissed. Like that built up defensive line was atrocious against the run. Like James Cook was contained, but if you look at the defensive line,
well, I we shouldn't go that far. The nose tackles were fine. Roy Lopez and Kyrus Ponga were not bad, but everybody else was really bad to, let's be honest, awful. I mean,
they just had holes.
and Lopez and Tonga played 38 snaps combined. So they played basically half the snaps combined. Those can't be your best interior defensive linemen. Like, it just, that cannot happen. And every other,
Justin Jones, disappointing. 43 snaps, two tackles.
Yeah. Bilal Nichols was worse. I mean, Bilal Nichols was shut out, man. Like, you can't play a whole game and not make a play. That's not ideal. Well,
LJ Collier was the same.
Yeah.
Because he played 22 snaps, had nothing.
Yeah. And so that's why, again, this is not a shot at Lopez and Tonga. We like them, but they are what they are. They cannot be your best defensive lineman. If they're your best, if they are your best defensive lineman in a game, you're losing that game. Like, every single time.
They 100% did.
And it's every single time. Like, there's not even a question about it. If they're the two best down linemen, you have lost that game.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, coming up next on the Rises Here podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk. Let's move on. What needs to change? We're not going to talk specifically about the Rams game. We've got another show to do that with. But what needs to change? That's coming up next on Rises Here. Back on the Rise of Syria podcast, best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now talking about what we need to see change. I think the first half you saw, you didn't really need to see anything change offensively. However, I'm the genius of Drew Petsing looked less genius in the second half. And I didn't have nearly so much a problem with the play calls, especially when they tried to do those run plays. Because, that was their identity a year ago, and with James Conner, they're usually good. It's just Buffalo's really good. Buffalo defended James Conner excellently. But I think what Petsy needs to make a more concerted effort to design plays that will go to the boundary receivers. You've got to get the ball in Harrison's hands. One catch for 5 yards, and Michael Wilson, one catch for 4 yards. Now, granted, both of them did have a drop, but to be targeted that few times, I know offensively the ball's got to go where they're going to go, and Buffalo did make sure to bracket Harrison so that his impact was mitigated, but like, he was only targeted 3 times. Michael Wilson was targeted. Oh, I got to pull that up as the first half summary. He was only targeted twice. He had the touchdown and the drop. So he was only targeted twice. So your outside receivers saw five total targets. Now, granted, Kyler loves throwing to Greg Dortch. He's incredibly reliable. Dortch has earned Kyler's trust. But he's also he doesn't get – like, he's not down the field most of the time, so he's an outlet. He's a manufactured – you know, you manufacture touches for him. He's in that Rondell Moore role. You know, you've got DeMarcado with a pair of catches. You've got Elijah Higgins with a pair of catches. You've got Trey McBride. It was the running back and tight end show. I don't know if this is just the way teams are defending the Cardinals, but it feels like Petsy needs to make a more concerted effort to put pressure on the boundaries so that what happens last week, which is where things got very tight, they started loading the box in the second half, and they just couldn't do things offensively. And one thing that will help with that, instead of making all your plays in the first half to your tight ends and running backs, you've got to challenge them on the boundaries.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing that needs to come from this, you know, is that this team needs to have more explosive plays. The clock draining isn't bad, and we understand. Jess and I specifically understand that this team doesn't have a defense that can hold up. So draining the clock is the best defense. That being said, they need desperately to have people that can make and create big plays. And I don't know if it was that Kyler just didn't feel comfortable going to Marvin after the drop. I mean, he went right back to him, right? Like,
right, like immediately and then never again. But, I will say this. There was no way for him to throw the ball to Marv. He was wide open, but there wasn't an opportunity for him to make that throw because, one, you don't expect to see that coming. He wasn't that open that early. He had Dan Orlovsky broke that down really great. And he was going to go to Greg Dortch on the hot, but a defender jumped. So he had to regroup. He moved to his left. Then he had to scramble right. And by then he would have had to have seen Marv way before, and there was no chance to do it. And they still had a nice play on that drive. But I mean, the visual looked terrible. And I think maybe the lack of playing time in the preseason did come back to bite him a little bit. Because if you look across the league, because, you know, the Cardinals with 270 yards of offense, it's bad. That's bad. Only there were 11 teams that did worse than them in week one. That's terrible. The first week of the NFL, and aside from the Cowboys, the Cardinals, who scored 20 offensive points, aside from the Cowboys, who scored 26 offensive points on 260-some-odd yards, the Cardinals had the most productive or most efficient offense of 270 yards or less, as they were one of only two teams that had that amount of yards and scored 20 points offensively. You know, but my goodness. I know we devalue the preseason. Some teams play, some teams don't play their starters. I think that, you know, how things went in the second half might have been impacted by the fact of the lack of game reps that they have. So they did their script really well. When they were on schedule, great. But once things got messy, they didn't have an answer for it, and they didn't have they weren't able to execute nearly as well.
Yeah, and it's one of those situations where, you know, we've lamented the fact that they didn't get any reps in the preseason together. And you can try and simulate that, and you can have joint practices, but two joint practices ain't going to cut it, man. I mean, they've just got to get up to speed together, and that's really all you can say about it at this point, like, because you're just going to beat that dead horse, right?
Yeah, and then, obviously defensively, they need their defensive line to be not atrocious, okay? They need to be not atrocious, and they need the edge guys to win a few one-on-ones as opposed to none.
Right, exactly. Like they've got to get anything from their defensive line. Because at that point, it doesn't matter who your corners are. It just genuinely doesn't matter. You can't cover like that. Like, so we can lament the pass coverage as much as we want. You know, and again, Sean Murphy bunting, Garrett Williams, Starling Thomas, they didn't have good days by any means, but at the end of the day, they also didn't have terrible days.
No,
they just got little help. You know who did not play particularly well in coverage that I was a little disappointed was Jalen Thompson had a rough day in coverage. He just didn't seem like he was himself. And I think it was him that got beat on that Khalil Shakir touchdown, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, and it's like, dude, you're a better player than that. Come on, give us a little something.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how that happened. Watching road games is hard because when I'm going to be at the stadium for the Rams game is how the playing time went. I want to see how they deployed because I'll have to go onto to NFL Plus and watch some of the All 22. Because the who they had playing, because Max Milton got a few plays, Keytrell Clark played some, Owen Papo played some, Chris Barnes had played some, and you know the cornerback and linebacker positions aren't typically ones where you rotate guys, and so I kind of want to see that, but I don't know if that'll make a difference, but like they need like what it has to change. Their defensive linemen have to make a few plays. Like linemen, they're not volume tackle guys, but you can't get shut out.
Right,
and I think can't get shut out.
I think when you talk about like Papo coming in, I think that was a package where he came in and Mac.
Yeah, he was part of their NASCAR package, I think.
Right, and Mac Wilson went to rush the passer. He rushed the passer 4 times. Papo rushed the passer 3 times. So like, and then he dropped into coverage 8 times. So like, I think that was his work is that he came in and you know got some reps as a blitzer and then some reps as, you know, going into coverage. But, you know, they've got, like you said, they've got to get something from somebody along the defensive line. Again, no shot at Lopez or Tonga, but they flat out just can't be your best defensive lineman. They just, they can't do it. They have to just be the sack was nice. Don't get me wrong, but you take away that sack. If they did everything else in that game, you're like, they had a good game. And that's all you need from them. But they can't be your best defensive lineman. And especially when you just paid 20 plus million on for those guys
right.
to make an impact.
I'd like to see, and I talked about the bat, but Kyler has been really good within the scheme and taking care of the football and going to the but. I do wish that this offense, and you talked about the explosive plays, I wish that the passing game pushed more.
Yeah, and that's what I said. They gotta take some shots. They've gotta trust their guys outside to make plays. And if they don't, then one, you know, obviously that's disappointing with Marvin, but two, then you have to start looking at how you can fix it because you can't not take the shots, but also be like, well, they're not creating big plays. It's like, no, you got to take the shots and see. I mean, like that.
Well, you also have to have the intermediate shots too, which they're not doing enough if we're not being open enough. Is a lot of their plays come on checkdowns and short throws, which is that's part of the NFL. That's totally fine, and if you can do that, that's where they move the ball. But you know, I think. If you look at, say, Arizona's offense versus San Francisco, what does San Francisco do really, really, really well is they make plays in the 10 to 20 yard range in the passing game. That's what makes it really dynamic. Yeah. You get the checkdowns too, but then you're making plays. You get, they don't have to be big chunk plays. You're getting medium chunk plays. So you're not having to go 5 and 6 yards a shot, which you can move down the field, but you know, you get a 13, you get a 15 in the passing game. And they were only getting it only feels like they were getting those on chunk runs. or on catches or on like DeMarcado's, his outlet throw that he took for 24 yards.
Right. And they did have, you know, to your point, and I agree 100%, but they did on two of his seven attempts of 10 plus yards, those were the drops, right? So he was,
that is true.
He was 1 for 7 with two drops, and those two drops probably would have turned into big chunk plays. And that's, again, that's where the problem persists, right? They've got to find a way to consistently press in those areas and make plays in those areas. And that's why I said, if that ends up being a situation that you look at and you go, this is, you know, not good enough, then that's a scouting and miscue, and that's an error in that way. But for the most part, you have the ability to push the ball down the field. You just have to do it. And if you're not doing it, then, you know, the questions need to start. Is that a scheme? Like you said, is that a scheme thing? Is that a talent thing? Or, you know, what is it? And I know people are going to be like, well, it's Kyler. He's afraid. Well, no, Kyler was literally the best deep ball passer in 2020 and in the first part of 2021, like the best intermediate and deep ball thrower in the NFL. So it's not a question of, can he do it, because he's done it over multiple seasons. It's why isn't it happening more consistently?
Yeah. Looking at some of these, their biggest plays, were guys taking something. So there was the 29 yard scramble. There was the 24 yard pass to DeMarcado, but that wasn't a deep throw. That was an outlet that he ran with. There is a short pass to James Conner that he turned into a big play. There was the 20-yard run. There was another scramble. There was a short pass that Dortch made into a 14-yard play. There was another scramble. The 12-yard play was a short pass to Dortch. That every play that they had of 10 yards or more was either a run, a scramble, or a yard after the catch on a short pass, which those are important, but it's not the same as having an intermediate pass game. And so, yeah, they're exactly that. Other than that, what needs to change?
Finishing a game.
Yes. It'd be fantastic. They just, and make, yes. That basically comes down to that, is that they need more stops early. They got one stop when they needed to, but like last year, they started strong and would fade often, and we can't wait to see that. We're going to talk about the Rams game, because the Cardinals have a great opportunity to get a win this week against a Rams team that is reeling from a loss, and two, they are so banged up offensively. Puka Nacua, almost their entire starting offensive line is injured. And we'll see with that. But anything else of note that we need to get off, that we need to mention before we get out of here?
No, I think it's just one of those things. We want to see this team, you know, play a complete game on offense, get some stops on defense, and finally win a game.
Yeah, and that would be get the monkey off their back, so, you know, that way they don't, you know, 0-3 going into week 4. Yeah, just let's pick up a win, and we'll talk about that game on Thursday. So with that, we'll wrap up this edition of the Rise of Spirit podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. This is episode 587. We will have at least two more shows the rest of the week. I do have a preview lined up with Cam DeSilva from the Rams Wire. Seth and I will also record. So you'll have the preview show that with Cam that will come on Thursday. We'll record Thursday night. That will drop on Friday, and we'll see what Howard does. In the meantime, he did the one post game one last this past weekend. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Rue. This is the Rise of Seer podcast. Thanks for listening. As always, we'll be back again soon.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.